As the calendar clicks down towards the new year, what new teams are some of the top free agents going to land on? Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, December 27th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And Troy, I want to talk about Gleyber Torres deciding to not change positions. I want to talk about where some of the top free agents are going to go. But I also wanted, I said this in our group chat, Vlad Guerrero Jr. discussed his possible extension with some Latin American media. And long story short, he said he's ready to go on a long-term deal for the right offer. He doesn't plan to negotiate after the first full day of spring training, and the Blue Jays front office is entirely aware of that fact. So right here, just vibe check. Does Vlad Guerrero Jr. sign an extension with the Blue Jays before spring training?
No, no chance in hell, as a famous wrestling promoter's theme song used to say. There's not a chance that's happening before spring training, and probably at all. He's probably going to be traded at the deadline.
Yeah, according to the Spanish Language podcast that he went on, he said that the Blue Jays offered him an extension that's not even close to what he wants. He says he's given the Blue Jays an exact dollar figure. If they meet that dollar figure, he will sign immediately. I'm going to argue it's probably greater than $500 million, given the fact that he's only he'll only be 26 years old when he goes into free agency. Is Vlad Guerrero, would he be the best hitter available in free agency next year, or are you still taking Kyle Tucker over Vlad Guerrero Jr. if he does, in fact, make it to free agency?
I think I would personally take Kyle Tucker over Vlad Guerrero Jr. I mean, it's close. And if Vlad Guerrero Jr. was a little bit more consistent with his greatness, then I would probably lean more towards Vlad Guerrero Jr. But Kyle Tucker, outside of the Jello shin in 2024, he's been more consistently great at the plate. Plus, he plays really good defense at a more premium position in the outfield than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does at first. And so I would personally take Kyle Tucker over Vlad Jr. out of those two.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Vlad had that amazing year in 2021, right? Batted .311, led the American League in on base and slugging and OPS, led baseball with 48 homers and 123 runs. Was the runner-up for AL MVP in 2021. Folks forget like how good that season was. And then after that, he batted .274 and .264, hit 32 home runs and 26 home runs before rebounding last year with a .323 season. Put up his second highest on base, .396, second highest slug, second highest OPS of his career. But he went from a 1.02 OPS to an .818. To a .788, up to a .940. On the case of Kyle Tucker, to your point, outside of that injury-riddled season last year and a poor batting average in 2022, he's been a pretty consistently he's been consistently consistent, right? Like you look at the WAR totals, 5.7, 5.4, 5.4, and then 4.7 WAR last year, despite only playing in 78 games. I do think that, like, you're right that the defense is more valuable in right field than at first base. I do think the flip side of that, though, is Vlad Guerrero will be 2 years younger when he plays that first season with his new team. Tucker turns 28 in about 3 weeks, so he'll be entering his age 29 season on the first year of that new deal, whereas Vlad, again, will be entering – he turns 26 in – mid-March, so he'll be entering his age 27 season with his new team. It feels like the AAV might be higher for Tucker, but the deal, the total money, because probably the length of the deal might be a little longer for Vlad if you're not worried about having an albatross contract at first base where some of those guys, those deals become very, very poor if that guy has a physical decline. I'm thinking about Ryan Howard, for instance, a deal that you, as a Phillies fan, you know all too well, right? Signs a big deal, has some physical decline, and it becomes an albatross on the team. Is Vlad going to get a deal long enough to do that, or have teams gotten better about first base contracts?
At 26 years old, he might get a deal long enough to do that, but I don't really think that that will be an issue for him as quickly as it was for Ryan Howard, because Ryan Howard's deal was a little bit later in his career. He didn't hit free agent. He didn't get the deal at 26 years old. So even if he signs a 10-plus year deal, more than half of that, I feel like he'll still be at a solid production level offensively, especially at first base. And so I think that he's still going to get that 10-plus year deal that we've seen a lot of guys get here over the past 5 or 6 years. It seems to be a growing trend, and I don't think that's going to end with Vlad Jr.
See, Vlad feels like he's going to try to get closer to 10 years to me. Something where it's like, hey, yes, I'll be a first baseman, but I can play until my late 30s. And like he's going to shoot for something like that. And I worry whenever you see a guy at a corner infield position, especially first base, hold out for that longer deal. Like I worry that's a Pete Alonso thing right now, that Pete Alonso is focused on trying to get a long-term deal that's, you know, 7-8 years or whatever. And a lot of teams just don't want to go that long on a first baseman. There's a few exceptions. You see the 3-year deal that Christian Walker just got in his upper 30s. Freddie Freeman has a couple more years on his deal in LA. He was 35 this most recent season, but he also feels like he should age pretty well, given the type of hitter that he is. I worry about somebody like Pete Alonso's deal, Vlad Guerrero's deal, because a lot of people are thinking about all of the bad first base deals, like the Albert Pujols contract, like the Ryan Howard deal, when they're hesitant to give that money. But it's definitely going to be something where, to me, I feel like they've got to figure something out before spring training with Vlad. Either know he's not going to sign or get him signed, because you don't want to go into next offseason potentially losing both Vlad and Bo Bichette. I feel like Bo Bichette's probably not going to get a qualifying offer, especially if he keeps up some of the recent performance we've seen. And so maybe your deadline call is right, where the Blue Jays try to move somebody at the deadline if they can't re-sign them. Because, I mean, Bo Bichette cratered last year. He was negative war he only played 81 games, but he batted .225 with a .598 OPS and negative .3 war when he was 4.9 the year before and an MVP finisher. So they've got a lot of stuff to figure out here. They got to fix Bo Bichette, but then they have to obviously get Vlad Guerrero, I think, either signed or just figure out what's going to happen. Because if not, like, they've struggled already to sign stars in Toronto. And what does it mean if you let a big one walk out the door and Vlad Guerrero? It's just going to make it even harder to sign stars in the future when they know there's nobody to play with.
Right, absolutely. And then, like you said, that's kind of been their downfall over the past 2 decades or more, is failing to sign big stars and failing to extend the big stars that they do develop or get through trade. And Bo Bichette, I mean, at this point, you could probably classify him as a bust, because he was a top prospect, and outside of it's just he's been vastly inconsistent. And then when he has played well outside of 2024, he gets hurt a lot. So I don't think he's lived up to that top prospect billing. And then go ahead.
It's hard for me to think about a dude getting almost 15 WAR in 3 years and saying that he's a bust. I do think you're right in that he hasn't been as consistent on a day-to-day basis as we would like. But even with last season's struggles, he's still a .290 hitter in the majors. And like, yes, it brought down a lot of the numbers. Like, his OPS is now .798 for his career, when he hadn't had a season before this year below .800. But like three MVP finishes, two All-Star selections, playing the hardest position to fill in sports, and good offensive seasons until this one, albeit not incredibly consistent on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis. But he's been a pretty valuable offensive player in the three full seasons that he's played. It's just, it took him a while early to get established in the majors, and it took him, and then 2024 was a completely lost season. Do we think he can rebound if he's healthy?
Bust may have been a little much, but he definitely hasn't lived up to the expectations.
I heard the YouTube comments coming after you when you said it. I was like, I got to jump in here.
Hey, they always come after me. It's all right. But he definitely hasn't lived up to expectations. And by the way, for those of you that do come after me in the comments, thanks for watching. We enjoy the views. But he can bounce back, and I expect him to in his contract year if he can stay healthy. But he, like I said, he hasn't lived up to expectations, in my opinion, even with the .290 career batting average. It's just people expected so much more from him, just like they and it's across the board for all top prospects. People expect all the moon from every top prospect that comes across the pipeline, and it's not going to happen. But I was a big Bo Bichette guy. I'm a lot more bearish on him now than I was a few years ago. But if he bounces back in 2025, we're 5 days away. I don't remember what year it is. And then he can change a lot of minds, and he can get some money. But I still think that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is obviously going to. I'm with you on the breaking the 500 million mark.
Yeah, there's some interesting month by month splits in Bo Bichette's career where he's pretty consistently a slow starter. The first month of the year for his career, he bats .254 with a .710 OPS. And then his batting average for May is almost .300, right? And then June, it drops back down to .270. And then he's up close to or flirting with .300 the rest of the year. It's really interesting to kind of see how he struggles the first month of the season almost every single year, and then is able to fix it sometimes. And then obviously in 2024 did not, got injured, missed a lot of the time, missed exactly half the year. He played 81 games. Okay. So moving on a little bit, we see some of these other guys that are out there. We got to figure out where they're going to go. Some pitchers, some hitters here, mostly hitters. Let's get the pitcher out of the way. Corbin Burnes. Where is Corbin Burnes going to sign? Cause he feels like he's the only real frontline starter left available, depending on how you feel about Nick Pivetta. But really, Corbin Burnes is the only frontline starter left in free agency. Is he going to be without a long-term home, or is he going to get the biggest deal of them all because he waited to the last to sign?
I think that the longer he waits, the more likely it is that he's going to be without a long-term home. But I think that Corbin Burnes, even though earlier in the offseason he was very heavily rumored to go to the Giants and talks were heating up and everything, we haven't heard much about that over the last few weeks. I think that Corbin Burnes is going to be a Boston Red Sox.
A member of the Boston Red Sox. It was a really weird year for Corbin Burnes as far as the results were still there, despite some of the inputs being worse. His strikeout rate was barely league average at 23% when he's coming off years of 30.5% in 2022, 35% in 2021. Having there's a lot of red on the Statcast now, but there was a lot more red on the Statcast just a couple years ago. And I do think there are a few of the smarter analytical teams who have paid attention to that trend. And they said, hey, we've seen some of the underlying peripherals on his stuff, his whiffs, his strikeout rate dropping the last few seasons. The last thing we want to do is give a long guarantee and a ton of money to a pitcher in his 30s with declining peripherals for whatever reason it is. I also kind of agree that I don't think Baltimore brings him back. I also don't know if the Red Sox make that commitment simply because they did just go out and get Carrot Crochet. And it feels like they're talking a big game on money, but I don't really think they're trying to spend that much money. And that's frustrating because they absolutely, the Red Sox have the money. they're one of the more like financially sound teams in baseball, but they don't spend to their weight, right? They could spend a lot more money than they do. I'm assuming, like, what is this? Their payroll last year was $171 million. It was $30-something million less than it was in 2022. Like, it went down. And I just don't know if they're going to do the big deal that Burns is going to need. If Max Fried got 8 years, Corbin Burns is going to need probably 8 years as well, and he's going to be probably $255 million. But the problem is, I don't know who does give him that deal, right? I wondered if maybe it would be the Mets. They've already signed a qualifying offer guy. I don't know if they're going to keep doing qualifying offer guys. I guess I'll say the Red Sox as well, but I really don't. I really think Corbin Burns is going to be the guy who has to sign a short-term deal, hope that his whiffs and everything else can come back up to his career norms, and then get the long-term deal next offseason, which sucks for Corbin Burns, but at the same time, I just think there's enough smart front offices out there that don't want to give him that money.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And me saying he's going to the Red Sox, I think it's going to be a one-year deal. And if it's any longer than that, there's going to be an opt-out after the first year. The first year is going to be – the contract's going to be pretty front-loaded, and then he's going to have an opportunity to try again next year.
Yeah. Christian's prediction, by the way, Christian gave us his predictions before the show. He said Toronto is going to get Corbin Burns. So doubling down on pitching, they already have a pretty decent staff, you know, with Kevin Gausman and Zaberios and some of those guys, getting Corbin Burns as well. Alex Bregman, the third baseman, obviously not going back to the Astros now. They've already kind of moved on by signing Christian Walker. Means they can leave Isak Paredes at third base. Where does Alex Bregman go in free agency? Christian said the Yankees, and I think I can see the Yankees from a defensive perspective because they want to figure out the defense. Jazz can play second. He did grade out positively in his first time ever playing third base last year. Shout out Gleyber Torres for refusing to move positions. But it feels like the best thing they can do is leave Jazz at second with the option to kick him out to center field and let Alex Bregman play third. And at this point, if you want a good defensive third baseman who can contribute offensively, there's not many options left in free agency outside of Alex Bregman, who we don't believe in, but like both of us don't believe in Alex Bregman. We're haters on Alex Bregman's long-term future, but feels like Alex Bregman's probably the guy at this point for the Yankees.
I can see him going to the Yankees, and that is a good prediction for where Alex Bregman's going to go. But I think that he's going to have be reunited with AJ Hinch. I think he's going to go to the Tigers. I think he's going to be their one big – I know they signed Alex Cobb, but that's not big. He's going to be their one big off-season free agent acquisition and reunite with AJ Hinch and them try to make a better push in the postseason in 2025.
That's a really interesting – like, the Tigers are in that weird position of the only real contract they have on the books is Javi Baez, and I don't even know if Javi Baez starts next year, right? Much better when he left the lineup and Trey Sweeney took over. Now, the issue with signing Bregman is you have prospect Jace Young at third and prospect Colt Keith at second. I call them prospects. Keith got 500 at-bats last year. He's not a prospect anymore. But you've got two young players, 23 and 24 years old, at second and third. Obviously, you find a way to get Bregman on the team, on the field. Maybe somebody plays a little bit of first base, but they're not sold on Spencer Torkelson. You know, maybe it's Bregman playing some first base as well. Maybe it's Young playing third base. You use the DH spot. That would be an interesting one. I really do think you could set the contract up where the first year isn't that expensive for you. Or you can try to get some money out the door now on that deal, knowing that you're going to have to figure out Tarik Skubal. He's a free agent after 26. You're going to have to extend him if you want to keep him. And like Baez is on your team. He's still owed, I can't do math in my head, $73 million for the next 3 years. You're stuck with that deal, but you will get $25 million in salary relief when Alex Cobb and Kenta Maeda both hit free agency after this year. Maybe they do go after Bregman and they say, hey, we'll give you a small 25 salary, and then 2026, the Cobb and Maeda money can go to Alex Bregman instead. And it would give him that veteran presence. I think this entire offense, maybe with the exception of Andy Ibañez, I think everybody else, I'm talking about starters, not about Javi Baez. Like, everybody else is under the age of 30. I think the old man on the field is Matt Vierlin at 28. So it would give them that veteran presence who's won and can lead a whole, can kind of lead the youth movement. I do also think he would give them another righty for the lineup, because I noticed this in the postseason. The Tigers have a lot of lefties. The opening day lineup, as of right now, according to FanGraphs, Roster Resource, six of the nine players in the starting lineup for the Tigers are left-handed hitters. So adding Bregman, a righty, would give you a little more balance in that lineup. That's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that. That's a good idea. I like that. Okay. Continuing on with this theme, we touched on it earlier, Pete Alonso. Where does Pete Alonso go? I think I've got him going back to the Mets at this point, simply because they probably value him a little bit more. And he's probably, because they don't have to pay him a qualifying offer, and he's probably willing, if he doesn't get the long-term deal he wants at the money and the years that he wants, he's probably willing to go back to the team he's played for versus a new team. So run it back with the Mets. Maybe he does your idea of the other one. Maybe he gets the opt-out after a year or two to go back in the market if he has a great year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. We talked about it on Monday, and you ran through every team in baseball and whether or not they needed a first baseman on Monday's episode. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. It's the Mets. I don't see him going anywhere else because no other team, like you said, no other team values him as highly as they do. They've had him for the last 6 years. They put up with him for that long. They put up with him for longer. So I also have him going back to the Mets.
Christian said the Giants were a candidate here, and I'm trying to think about, like, Lamonte Wade Jr., final year of his deal. Maybe they try to cut some of that money. Does Pete Alonso fit in, you know, right-handed hitter? Does he fit in with Oracle Park? Would that be a good idea for them to, like, to do another big contract for a corner infielder? Or would that be something, the Boris special, which they did with Chapman and with Snell, where they give him a one-year deal or a multi-year deal, but to give him opt-outs after the first year? If he signs a one-year deal somewhere, how likely is it that San Francisco's that place simply because they've shown Boris they're willing to do that?
I just don't see – I don't see them – I feel like Buster Posey knows baseball a little bit better than to sign Pete Alonso.
Than Farhan Zaidi did.
Right. Like, that's a Farhan Zaidi move to sign a one-trick pony, even to a one-year deal. And
with a qualifying offer, by the way, giving up draft picks for him.
Right. And what Pete Alonso, obviously what Pete Alonso is wanting from whatever team does sign him is a lot more than any team is willing to give him. And I'm looking at his expected home runs by park. Only one season would he have more home runs playing all his games in Oracle Park than he had in his actual season. And that was 2021. And he would have had two more. Every other season was less by 3 to 5 at least. And then in 2019, it was less by 10 or 7, sorry. While they do need an upgrade over Lamonte Wade Jr., I don't think it's going to be Pete Alonso.
Flip side of this here, 16 career starts in Oracle Park, 7 home runs. It is the 7th highest slugging percentage for him in any ballpark where he has 10 or more games, a 603 slug. So the times he's been there, he's actually played there, he's done pretty well. It's just a small sample size of 16 starts. The only other teams that he's done better in, as far as slugging goes, Dodger Stadium, Nationals Park, Yankee Stadium, Busch Stadium, Wrigley Field, and Coors Field. He actually has a lower slugging percentage at Citi Field than he does at Oracle Park, albeit with a much larger sample size. Okay. Teoscar Hernandez, does he go back to the Dodgers or does he go somewhere else?
Yeah, I saw a report the other day. I don't remember. I was just scrolling through Twitter randomly and saw a report that the Dodgers are now pivoting to try and find secondary options to Teoscar Hernandez. So I think the Dodgers and Teoscar Hernandez is no longer a possibility for 2025. This one's a hard one, man. I mean, there's teams that could use improvements in the outfield, but there's and a lot of those teams won't do it. I think
qualifying that, offer. A lot of teams won't do it because the qualifying offer.
Yep. And I he would be a perfect fit in Atlanta, but I don't think that Alex Anthopoulos would do it because of the qualifying offer.
He's explicitly said he doesn't want to give up a draft pick.
Yeah. So Teoscar Hernandez, I'm going to say that I'll say he'll be a Yankee. I mean, I know they already have a loaded outfield, but what's one more bat in the lineup going to hurt them? they can help and keep Stanton out of the field every day with adding Teoscar Hernandez.
Right now, their projected left field depth chart is Jason Dominguez getting 441 plate appearances and batting 249, with Cody Bellinger getting 161, which I'm confused where Cody's 161 are coming from. Are they assuming Jazz is in center? Are they assuming Jason Dominguez is in center? It doesn't quite make a lot of sense to me. Or are they seeing Trent Grisham's in center? I don't know. They didn't play Grisham a lot last year, it felt like. So I think it would be an upgrade over Jason Dominguez and would give them the runway. At the same time, at a certain point, you have to play Jason Dominguez eventually. Yeah. You've had him up so many times and you've not really used him. At some point in time, you have to play Jason Dominguez. And I just don't know where it's going to be. Like, I don't know when it's going to happen. I know where I would love for him to go because I think he would be fantastic and he would be better than the options that they currently have. And that's Cincinnati.
Yeah.
He would crush in that ballpark. Yep. He would give them the ability to get Spencer Steer out of the field on an everyday basis because I love Spencer Steer. He is not a good defender anywhere on the field. He's not... He's a ball player. He'll play five different positions. He's just not good at any of them. And so if you can get him out of the field, that'd be great. But like outside of that, Spencer Steer, Will Benson, Stuart Fairchild, Jake Fraley, you're not taking at-bats away from Teoscar Hernandez to give them to any of those guys. So I think that'd be great, but the qualifying offer is going to stop him, obviously. Speaking of qualifying offer, last one here, Anthony Santander. Who gets the 40 home run man from last season? I think I would point out to everybody listening, defensively, he's not that great. A lot of what we've heard reported by different media members, a lot of teams view him as if he plays right field, it's for a season or two, and he's moving to DH. So you're in a situation where you kind of have to be careful about the commitment you give him, and do you want to lock up a DH spot every year for the foreseeable future? But who gets Anthony Santander in free agency?
That's another tough one. He's another qualifying offer guy and another outfielder, albeit he is a switch hitter. But I think that Anthony Santander is going to be the secondary option that the Dodgers turn to instead of Teoscar Hernandez, to bring in another outfielder, a switch hitter to add to that lineup. And like you said, a guy that hit 40 home runs in 2024.
That gives him Tommy Edmund in center, Michael Conforto in left, Andy Pajes would be your first bench bat with Santander. James Altman would be a second bench bat. Probably Altman probably starts in the minors unless you get rid of Chris Taylor, because Chris Taylor is kind of your last guy on the bench, your infield outfield utility guy. I do think Santander is a tough fit in LA from the perspective of Shohei's going to be the DH for the next 9 years. I do like the fit of adding the switch hitter. It feels like the versatility of having so many guys who can either bat lefty, switch hit, things like that is useful. I do think he could be a succession plan to Freddie Freeman at first base. And I love Freddie Freeman. I'm not saying they should get rid of him. He is signed for, I think, 3 more seasons. So you'd have a couple years of playing Santander in the field before you shifted him to first base when Freddie's done after 27, I think. He's got through age 38 is the deal, if I remember right. So I don't hate the idea. I do think they'd be a little nervous about the qualifying offer and giving up draft picks simply because they've done so good with drafting recently. And I do think it's interesting. They jumped on Blake Snell very early. He was the one frontline starter that didn't have a qualifying offer because he had been given a previous one that the Giants had to pay for when they got him. So I struggle with Santander. I do wonder if the Yankees are the fit here. I know I didn't say them for Teoscar, but I do wonder if Santander is, we'll throw him in left field for a year or two, and then we'll move him to DH or first base when, you know, because he can play some first, and then we can also use him at DH when Stanton's finally gone. So part of me thinks that'll be the big bat they get and their offseason would be done. Although I don't think they can probably swing it financially to get both Santander and Bregman. It's probably one or the other right now.
Yeah, and I mean, if they did land either Bregman or Santander, there's probably a discussion that they had the best offseason. Even though the Mets got Juan Soto, the Yankees have had a really good offseason across the board. And if they do add one of those guys, it's just even better.
Yeah, they do have money coming free. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt's obviously your first baseman for next year, $12.5 million. But his money's gone after this year. Stroman's money is gone. He has a vesting option for 2018. He has to pitch 140 innings. So you may be done with his $18 million. Bellinger has a good year. He could opt out. That's $25 million off the 26th salary. Stanton's around for a little while longer, but feels like first base, Santander can play some first base, can move over to DH when Stanton's gone. You've got some ops and flexibility there. So it feels like it's a good, not a lock, right? But it feels like it's a pretty decent bet. I just also don't think Baltimore's going to bring him back. It just feels like Baltimore doesn't want to spend money this offseason. Mike Elias is dumb. And it feels like they're just kind of wasting this competitive window, right?
Yeah. Everything we've seen out of Baltimore this offseason is just not being willing to spend money and get across that next step and make it past their first round matchup in the playoffs, which they have not been able to do in each of the last two seasons.
There you go. Final thing before we go, report from John Heyman that Gleyber Torres turned down an opportunity to sign with the Washington Nationals because he didn't want to move to third base. Good idea, bad idea. What are we thinking here on Gleyber Torres declining to sign with the Nationals because they'd have him play third?
I mean, he's never played third in the majors in his career. I still think it is a bad idea because, I mean, it's not like teams are coming out of the woodworks to sign him as it is. So
take a job, right? Job's better than no job.
Yeah. And he's not a good fielder, regardless of what position he's played in the majors. He's only had one season of better than negative OAA per Baseball Savant, and that was at second base in 2022. He had a zero. Everything else has been negative at second base or shortstop throughout his career. So, and he's got a weak arm. So, I mean, he's not going to be good at any of them regardless, but he needs a job right now because he doesn't have one.
Yeah, that's the hard part is, like, you could always DH some. There in New York, I'm sorry, in Washington, like they have a bunch of outfielders in the lineup. And right now, roster resource has James Wood DHing while Alex Call plays left field. I don't think anybody's beating down the door to get Alex Call in the lineup. You could put Wood in left. You could put Torres in third base or DH sometimes. But I think if the money was close to league minimum, I think it's fine to turn down the opportunity. Because you can probably get equivalent money as you get close to spring training, right? Yeah. But if it was legitimate money, if it was somebody's offered him $6-7 million to play, I think it's a bad call simply because, like you said, he's not really a good fielder. And you don't want to assume the deals are going to get better as you get closer to the season. Usually prices come down the closer you get to the season. But either way, I'm sure that's going to go over just as well as it did with the Yankees when he refused to move to third and they made Jazz go play third. So fun news there. Good luck, Gleyber Torres, with what you're trying to do here, trying to figure out where to play in 2025. Good luck, buddy. This has been First Pitch for Friday, December 27th. Listen on the audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. hit the notification bell so you know when we drop a new episode. We'll be back on Monday with more breaking down what happens over the weekend, assuming stuff happens. We'll be here either way. But until then, this has been First Pitch.